Our next guest needs no introduction, who has also been a regular fixture at BizNews. David Shapiro walked onto the Johannesburg Stock Exchange in 1972, a newly qualified CA looking for something a little more interesting. 54 years later, he's still trading, still riding, still on air, and still a little more curious about markets than the day he started. Along the way, he served on the JSC committee from 1986 to 1992, made senior partner in 1988, and built a track record strong enough to win 3 Raging Bull Awards. He's now Deputy Chairman and Chief Global Equity Strategist at Otto 1890, formerly Sasfin Securities. Please welcome David Shapiro.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, the leader in offshore investing, connecting South Africa to opportunities worldwide. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Sheesh. After listening to Pitt, I'm after being in the market 55 years, I'm not quite sure how I made it. You know, look, Pitt's a great intellectual. I love listening to him. And we're not far away. I wish I could articulate in the same way that he looks at the financial industry. I'm not a fund manager. I don't buy products. I don't get involved in the institutional market. My whole business is around looking after private wealth. I look after, and not necessarily rich people. I don't turn away anybody. If you've got 10,000 Rand or 10 million, we find a solution for you. And that's something I do. My whole approach is actually pretty similar to what Pitt was hinting at. My motto or my approach is, if you can't do it in 20, you're not going to do it in 2000. Meaning, if you can't find 20 businesses in which to invest, you're not going to find 2,000. And therefore, I'm very confined. I'm a little more open-minded than Pitt in terms of how I love the markets. And, you know, that's my approach. And in fact, the 20 stocks that I buy are the index stocks. And instead of looking at the S&P 500 or the S&P 100, I push it down. I narrow it down to the top 15 or 20 odd businesses of those, of that index. Added 1 or 2 maybe European stocks and so on. So most of the businesses I buy are, whether they are AI, I'm not against AI. In fact, at the moment, I just find it absolutely compelling. But I think investment can be pretty boring. It is. It's actually a very boring subject. I mean, it's hardly the stuff that passion is made up of, you know, just listening to some cross asset analyst discussing the latest inflation number, I mean, and the impact on the yield curve or so and so. I mean, that's hardly stuff that you really want to get involved in. Or listening to a central banker give his talk, you know, in this monotone. I mean, go through an ECB presentation, see how long you last. But if you really want to do yourself damage, pick up a Discovery annual statement or an Old Mutual annual statement. Go through from page 1 to page 300. See how long you lost. It's terrible stuff. It's boring, boring, boring. You know, and then you've got analysts and that who spend their entire life trying to find the discount between 10 cent and process and NASPE. I don't know what they do with it, but they're constantly monitoring the discount, which never closes. It always remains the same for whatever reason. There are plenty of reasons in that. So my passion in the market is really, I love those pioneers. I love the man who, yeah, you know, we're all looking at cell phones here. You know, don't worry, you can. I don't mind. It gives me a lot of enthusiasm and really makes me feel great. Send messages to your kids. But you know, I love the passion of that man who invented that, which today is your link to your world. It contains your life. I mean, just think about it. It's only 15 years old, and it's getting stronger and stronger. Just think about the man who sends rockets into space, offloads the cargo, brings it back safely for another trip. He's a logistics man. I mean, these are brilliant people. And I love that. In my mind, that's where the passion of the markets, I'll go. And, you know, the person who designs that mini chip, that little miniature semiconductor that you can put in the palm of your hand, and it contains library after library after library of information in this little chip. I mean, that to me is where I find the passion in markets. There's one thing about markets, and I'm a little anal in that respect, is that when you're on Market Watch, the clocks don't have a snooze button. You can't press snooze. You can't do, I know it's remarkable, but you can't do what we do when you're looking after other people's money. I don't think you can do it part-time. You know, markets never sleep. And I think they're in a constant state of flux. They don't care if you're tired. You know, they require constant attention. And if you're complacent, they punish you. But the big thing is, don't worry if you're worried, because that's a good sign. That means you're invested. You're well invested. If you're not worried, it means you're not really well invested. So there's no snooze button, because history keeps hitting the alarm on that. And if we rewind 25 years, if you go back 25 years, just think what we have gone through. I've got a list here, but I'm not going to spend all my money. I've only got 40 minutes left. I'm not going to spend all the time going through it. But, you know, from the Asian crisis, the dot-com bubble, the 9/11 attacks, Iraq war, every 2 years, there has been something for us to worry about as well. We had in 2023, Gaza, 2025, Liberation Day, 2026, the Iranian war. Okay? So trading markets is actually a subscription plan for neurotics, okay? A crisis every 2 years. But measure the S&P over those years. Over 30 years, the S&P, despite it, it's something Pitt mentioned as well, except I do it in dollars. And sometimes you've got to convert the rand to dollars. You know, it can just take a little bit of a shade off your returns. So in the past 30 years, the S&P is up 1,070% or 8.5%. On a total return, it's up 10.5%. But that's having gone through all of those crises as well. So, of course, markets are like obstacle courses. Just when you think you've cleared one, you get another one as well. And of those hurdles, the one thing, and you'll see where I'm getting to in, you know, where I'm trying to get it to. Of those crises, by far the biggest one was COVID. COVID changed our lives. And I don't think we have any idea of what it has done to the global markets, to the globalization, to supply chains. Go through, I'll give you the headings. Supply chain disruption, increase in unemployment, decrease in consumer spending, stimulus measures that the government introduced. Remote work. Just think how that's changed. Just think what we have learned through remote work. E-commerce. Just think of the things that came. Stock market volatility. Global trade. Sectoral shifts. I go to New York often. I have a daughter in Boston, and she was in New York. And so we go across often. I use New York as my focal point and then go up there. When you see how COVID has changed New York, how retail on the Upper West Side has fallen apart. You can find as much retail space as you want. How it affected traffic, how it affected remote work. Because people work remotely, the Midtown sector, all those places that served salads and things like that for people to eat a lunch, gone. Dramatic change in the way that it has affected New York and that. And the scars are still there. Now, we haven't got enough time. You can do it through question time and ask me further on this. But COVID was a massive disruptor. And when you think about Kevin Warsh at the moment, for me, the far most important statement that he made, I mean, this going back and saying, over the past 5 years, we have not overcome inflation. An admission that they don't know what's happening and that they have to go back and have these task force to go and look at inflation. It's an admission of failure. And he's been brave enough to do so. Don't attack him. He's not, you know, the people say, oh, he's hawkish on inflation and that, but he won't raise, and the bond vigilantes are having a go at him. He's saying, listen, we don't know. Those levers we were pulling were wrong. Are we going to try and look for the right levers to push? If we go back to markets there, and you'll see where I'm coming on now, is that we had a blockbuster year in 2019. And why? Because we'd come out of the great financial crisis. Interest rates went up again, and now they started to come down. And we started to get almost a normalization of the global economy. Things were starting to look better. What happened? COVID comes. And this was one of the most dramatic issues in history. Things just closed down. Governments gave people money and so on. We had a great rebound because everybody had this money. So markets started to go up. All the companies that were supplying computers, computer games, and so on started to go up during 2020. And as I say, the outcome with these measures now, which Kevin Warsh is trying to address. 2021, we go in, markets open again, vaccines, everything that was good in 2020 started to come down as well. But for the first time, Powell recognizes that. He recognizes that, hold on, inflation is not transitory. So what does he do in 2022? He jacks interest rates from 0 to 5.5%. I mean, that's a massive disruption. Markets collapsed. Markets collapsed, but there was a quiet revolution that happened. And that was in November 2022. ChatGPT was released to the market, AI. And what's happened since? If it wasn't for ChatGPT in November 22, we would have still been in that environment of high interest rates. They haven't come down. They're still incredibly high, and they're at levels now where that normal, usual economy cannot survive. If it wasn't for ChatGPT, if it wasn't for AI, believe me, Mr. Hogg would have had half the people here at the conference. Simply the other half would not have been able to afford it. That's how important it has been to the global economy. So we've got this two-highway economy. We've got the one, which is the Ferrari highway, the other trucks. The Ferrari highway led by what we're seeing in AI, the amount of fuel that is going into driving that economy. There's another element of that we've forgotten because we're very critical of it. We're incredibly critical of AI. We take a cynical view towards it. But what's happening in AI as well, and I'm going to give you, I'm welcome to give you all the amounts of money that are being spent driving new data centers, building this out, the companies that are involved. There's also the multiplier effect. Economics 101. If you're building a data center here in Newcastle, believe me, it's going to bring a huge amount of jobs. It creates an ecosystem. Every time a new investment goes up, it creates an ecosystem. The plumber, he goes and puts toilets in the water, man, you know, or people get employed there. There's a school. Things happen around it. And we cannot ignore, with all the money we do, we criticize the AI companies for overspending, but you forget what that does and how resilient this has kept the U.S. economy. Forget about, even with interest rates at these levels, the amount of money that these companies are generating and spending has this also stabilizing effect on the U.S. economy as well. So you can't ignore it. Yes, there's a lot we can discuss about these things. But take a look at the S&P 500. Take a look at what it's done over the last 4 years. The companies that have floated to the top and those in the old economy that have floated to the bottom. Or just remain at the bottom. I did have a presentation here, but I didn't know we weren't going to have it. So it's very difficult to give you a chart. Go and look at the top 10 trillion dollar companies in the US, what it's done to the US economy and what it's done to investment. The problem is that we still have interest rates shifting sideways. going nowhere now. And it's likely that in the US, they will stay at these kind of levels. And you can't, your housing market suffers with your bond rates, your 30-year mortgage rates now over 5%. It is a big problem within the US. So while you've got this high-speed economy, you still have that old economy in areas like housing that are under under pressure. There's again, I'm going to try and go through this pretty quickly as well and go into question times and that. But there's one thing I want to tell you and show you how the US has grown and how what this has meant for the US. If we look at the US equity markets, the value of US equity markets is $80 trillion, okay? That's how big it is. That's how big this pool of investments is. What do you think China is? Huh? 70, 80. The top 10 businesses in the US far exceed the size of the Chinese market. Okay, and so it goes. Japan, 86.7. So the US is bigger than the top 10 markets in the world. And there are reasons for that. You know, it's also capital, whatever it is. South Africa, 1.3 million, trillion. But that 1.3 trillion includes BHP, Anglo-American, AB InBev, British American Tobacco, Naspers, Process, you name it. All of those grouped together, 1.3 trillion. NVIDIA, 5.3 trillion. JC, 1.3 trillion. So where do you want to play? Anyway, we're going to have sessions with Stafford later. He can explain what AI is, simplify it and that. But what I do want to do in the last few minutes that I have is if we think AI is too expensive, what do you rotate into? What industries are you going to go into? Procter & Gamble, Unilever, Johnson & Johnson, you name them. Forget about it. Because what's happened since COVID, what's happened in the last few years, is that those traditional cyclicals, which are going to benefit from rate cuts as well, have changed. The tastes have changed. Behaviors have changed in those last few years. And industries that we once venerated and catered to our lifestyles are in secular decline. Rather than eat in a restaurant, people order Uber Eats. Okay? Youngsters couldn't be bothered about theater. They'd rather stay at home and watch stream a movie. We buy online. We seldom drink alcohol. We don't socialize, or we socialize on WhatsApp. And we work from home in sweatpants. That's what we are today. And it isn't whether AI is valued. It's what areas of the economy are going to give you better returns. You know how things have changed. You know how industries have changed and that. I watch in awe when I'm in New York. I look out the window and I watch the Amazon trucks offload or the Fresh Directs every morning in our small apartment building that I live in as well. Every day they come twice a day and the packages are piled up. In fact, they have to have a system where they actually scan the packages so to advise you on that. Fresh Direct, overnight, you need milk, you need sugar, you need whatever, lettuce, whatever. You put it online, 8 o'clock in the morning, doorbell goes, there it is. So it's quite incredible to see how things have changed and how people have changed and how habits have changed and that. I've got 1 minute to go as well. I think beyond AI, there are a lot of themes that are unfolding as well, which I think are very exciting. First of all, weight loss drugs are the new oil. I mean, every time we go to New York, our friends get smaller and smaller and smaller. They're not eating at McDonald's anymore. They're killing the fast food industry. But it's true. It's happening. It's real as well. You've got money pouring into renewable energy, mainly to drive the AI theme, to drive those centers as well. Another area that you have to look at is the new orders for new aircraft. I'm not a Farnborough person, but I listened in absolute awe to the presentation that took place. When you understand how many people are traveling, how many new aircraft are orders, how people are changing the orders, go look at Rolls-Royce to see how they are modifying the engines for the new area. They're going to be 20% more efficient than the engines today. But not only that, they're using the turbines to drive energy as well. Manufacturing, automating factories. You know, factories today are robotically driven as well. It's a new theme. Space. Do not ignore space. Watch what is happening. I'm not saying buy Elon, but what a man. You know, just when you think of what he's doing, wanting to put, literally sending up rockets, bringing them back, Starlink, etc. I just find it fascinating stuff. This is not an endorsement as well, because you do want some kind of return as well. And then the commodity markets. Commodity markets at a time where you need aluminium, where you need copper to drive these. We finished there, but I just want to say the key to investing is to remain imaginative, attentive, and resilient, and to position yourself for the next decade. Stay exposed to technology while embracing other things. This digital world is not a fad. You know, it's the operating system of our lives.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, building wealth and protecting legacy since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox, sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.